Support for Talking Art on WVIK comes from the people at Quad City Bank and Trust, helping the local community with their banking and financial needs for more than 20 years. Information is at qcbt.com.
This is Carolyn Martin, and I'm talking art today with Vanessa Sage, assistant curator at the Figge Art Museum in Davenport, about her upcoming lecture on rubble artists, which will be held this Thursday, March 11th at 6:30 p.m. Welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you for having me.
Now, many people think of artists and creative people in general as rebels in a way. There is this very romantic image of artists as people who tend to defy tradition. Why do you think that is?
Well, personally, I think that whether we're talking about artists or poets or musicians or other people working in creative ways, typically they're driven by something internal, whether partially or fully. And I think that that drive to create sets people apart from the crowd. And they may have new ideas that are unbound by tradition or apart from generally accepted forms. And it's something that I think that people in general and maybe people in the upper reaches of different arts through time can have some difficulty accepting. In addition, I think that there, in terms of art historical figures and specific artists, we tend to look at artists who defied tradition or the establishment in some way. We look at them and we admire them for their tenacity and their spirit, as well as for creating an original work that in many cases influenced others.
Mm-hmm. What topics will you be discussing in your lecture this week?
So during the talk, I plan to talk about individuals as well as groups who defied convention or set off on an independent path in order to achieve what they wanted to with their artwork. And in addition, I'll be talking about some people who challenged the way the art world was functioning in different ways, and through both their art as well as those acts changed the course of art. I'm also going to touch on how things have shifted in art history, specifically how people, artists, as well as organizations who were considered outliers came to represent the traditional as the avant-garde continued to evolve and things continued to progress. And also talk about some specific anecdotes relating to those things.
Can you talk about a particular artist featured in the current For America exhibition who, as an individual, flouted convention?
There are a couple artists that I think did that in different ways. In terms of societal conventions, there are several examples. And I thought immediately about the artist Cecilia Beau, who has a stunning self-portrait in the exhibition. It's from 1894. She has this really determined look on her face. She's in three-quarter profile, gazing straight ahead, and it's beautifully painted. And she was born in 1855. So as a woman during that time, she would have been expected to marry. And then if she was pursuing art before that marriage, likely to give up her artistic pursuits after. But she pursued the artistic profession at a time when it was rare for women to do so, and she did it with great determination. She studied at the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts, the Academy Julienne. She experienced great success as a portraitist and is considered one of the greatest painters from that era. And then in terms of artistic style, I would mention Jane Freilicher. So this is a little bit different than what people usually think about when they think about like abstract expressionism. But there was a time when abstract expressionism, it was very dominant. And the artists who were pursuing realism were not critically revered like those who were pursuing abstract, working abstractly. But she pursued working within a figurative mode. And she and other artists during that period who pursued realism are featured in the post-war realism section of For America.
Well, as you walk through the For America exhibit at the Figge, which begins in the 19th century up on the third floor, and then it ends in our very modern 21st century down on the ground floor. So it's spread out through three floors, you really can't help but be astonished at the end by the artistic evolution that's taken place. I was curious, how did the National Academy of Design, whose collection was curated for this exhibit, how did they adapt to the changing times, and how in particular did they view modernism?
So the story of the National Academy of Design is pretty interesting. And as you said, as you walk through the exhibition, you can see things broadening, both in terms of the diversity of the artists involved at the Academy, as well as the kind of painting that they are creating. But the Academy itself developed out of a previous academy that was the American Academy of Fine Arts, which was known for being more conservative and supporting classicism. And it was started, the National Academy was started by 30 artists who wanted more, and they wanted to make it possible, to promote the professional development of professional artists in America. And so they did something, they started the New York Drawing Association because they felt that drawing from life and was an essential part of professional artistic development. And so they started out pushing against the established academy. But then as time evolved, they became known as a place that promoted figuration as abstraction, and other forms of modernism were developing. And so they were viewed, they became more powerful, and then they were being viewed as a place of traditional aesthetics. And they, like a lot of arts organizations in the United States, have evolved through time. So now they have, and you can see this in the exhibition, they've broadened the membership of the Academy, but also over time, the kind of art that they promote through the organization.
What can you tell us about the issues of gender and race within artistic organizations over time? Because we see that as you walk through For America.
Well, I think that this was something that Diana Thompson, who is one of the curators of the exhibition, said in her art talk, was that, you know, kind of by definition, academies are exclusionary, and that they did not exist within a bubble. So throughout the Academy's history, you can see changes in terms of representation within the Academy's membership. I mean, even at the Academy, the first Native American National Academician didn't become a member until 2011. That is not long ago at all. And I think a lot of organizations are still, you know, they're reckoning with their past, but you have to evolve over time to remain a viable organization and a vibrant one, and one that shows the depth of art that can be made by different people from different backgrounds and experiences.
Mm-hmm. There's in the catalog that you can purchase, I believe, in the Figge gift store, which is really beautiful. There's this lovely essay written by, I'm not sure if it's the same Native American artist you mentioned. It was from Jean Quictusee Smith. She was reflecting back on her own heritage and how many of the earlier artists and members of the Academy were, you know, were painting the American West, but portraying it in a very different way, really kind of painting out her indigenous ancestors, and how now, you know, bringing her voice to the forefront really is so important in terms of us truly understanding, you know, this place that we live in today, that we all share.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the great things about For America is these responses by current national academicians. And yes, Joan Quictusee Smith was the first Native American national academician. And in her response to that Bierstadt painting, it just adds a different perspective than people are familiar with when viewing the work. So I think it adds a great deal to looking at the past and looking at the history of American painting.
Mm-hmm. Well, conflicts between artists and their art organizations are not new. There are some interesting parallels between the United States and European art history that you'll be exploring in your lecture this coming week as well. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and specifically in terms of some parallels, I was going to talk about Impressionism, its impact in the United States, but also the roots of Impressionism in France. The Impressionists wanted to make art the way that they wanted to. They wanted to express art the way they wanted to, and they wanted the public to be able to see that art. And so this resulted in them holding independent art exhibitions after being refused entry to the Salon in Paris because their work was considered unfavorably by the traditionalists and the ones who decided what was exhibited in the Salon. In A New Internationalism, which is a section in For America, they talk about these artists who were influenced by European artwork, specifically French Impressionism, and how they brought that over to the United States in the work that they were creating. And there was a lot of resistance also to Impressionism in the United States initially. And one example would be a group that is called, so there was a group, the Society of American Artists broke from the National Academy in 1877 because they thought it was too conservative. And then 20 years after that, a group called the Ten broke from that splinter group because they felt that that secondary organization was hostile to Impressionism. And so you can see that there are artists who want to express themselves and want to follow the kind of painting, the kind of art that they want to create. And it's they're facing resistance from these powerful organizations. And so they form their own independent groups and hold their own independent exhibitions so that the public can see the artwork that they're creating.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost, I've thought about this several times, it's almost like they are developing a new language. You know, when there's such a radical departure, and we've seen this multiple times throughout history, this radical departure in terms of painting style, where there's this completely different aesthetic vision and idea of how things should be represented, and an entire group, sometimes it's a fairly small group, but sometimes it's a large group, really gets behind that and is a proponent of this new change. It's so curious.
And it's also interesting because some of the artists who are grouped together, their styles differ, I mean, significantly, but they've found compatriots in the fact that they're not being accepted by the who's holding the exhibitions, who decides what art gets into what venues and things like that.
Mm-hmm. There's a somewhat negative connotation to that word rebel. Some commonly used synonyms are contrary or defiant or disobedient. And yet rebellion is often necessary to move our society or world forward. Do you see a virtuous aspect to rebellion?
Well, I think certainly within the context of the artists I will be talking about, who have defied convention or challenged the status quo, I think there is something, and who knows what, and, you know, they have their own motivations, and, but in propelling things forward, I think that is, for the greater good or to to push things forward. There is something there in that regard. Mm-hmm. And that specifically, I think that groups of artists banding together in order to create better conditions, not only for themselves, but for other artists to be able to create the artwork that they want. That is something I think that's definitely towards more open expression, and there's something virtuous to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. It's, you know, conformity just leads to portrayal of socially accepted images, which don't really make us think in a as deep a manner as someone who's really portraying something in a novel way, almost like a prophet in a way. And there is this idea of rebel artists as, you know, as thinkers, almost as philosophers, commenting on the social conditions of our time, our political struggles, our frustrations. Are you attracted to paintings that intentionally convey a message to the observer?
I am very drawn to artwork that has a narrative to it, something that I can really dig into, or a humanistic element to the work. And that's when there's a couple different angles, I think, of that experience in For America. I appreciate seeing the broadening experiences and the varied things that these artists are addressing and the way that they are choosing to express that. And I notice something different every time I look at the works. In terms of portraits, I wonder, you know, how these artists saw the world, how they saw themselves, why they chose to express themselves in that way. And in terms of messages or specific concepts that the artists are trying to convey through, let's say, a narrative, I'm drawn to those works as well. One example is Paul Sample's painting Unemployment, which portrays a mass of people on the streets during the Depression era. And it has all these fascinating vignettes, the aftermath of a fistfight. There's a guy leaning up against a building who looks like he may be passed out. And there's an element of humor to it. There's also a really serious look at the effects on everyday people during the Depression.
There is so much to see with this exhibit. And just like you mentioned in that last painting, you could spend so much time in front of that, that I think most visitors will probably feel when they leave that they need to come back. I'm going to need to go back two or three times to really pull it all in, because there's so much to see. Lastly, I was wondering what drew you to the lecture topic of rebel artists. Is there something inherently rebellious within you?
Oh, well, I don't know specifically with me that there is, but I really admire artists who have challenged the way that things are, whether structurally or artistically within the art world. I think it takes a lot of conviction. When you are pursuing a profession that is in many ways dependent on the support of those people that they may have railed against. And I was drawn to this topic originally in reading about the origins of the National Academy, and just thinking about that cycle of, you know, established arts organizations or things that were conventionally accepted, and then artists who challenged those things.
Mm-hmm. Well, Vanessa Sage, thank you so much for talking today and for all that you bring to the Figge.
Thank you.
Figge Art Museum Assistant Curator Vanessa Sage will give a virtual lecture entitled Rebel Artist this Thursday, March 11th at 6:30 p.m. This is a free program, although you do need to register online at figgeartmuseum.org. A Zoom link will be emailed to you 2 hours prior to the talk beginning. This has been Carolyn Martin, talking art in the Quad Cities for WVIK. Theme music is provided by a Quad City legend, the late Ellis Kell.